It's not right here in Connecticut, but a lot of Connecticut residents are really worried about it. What happened in Kansas City? So as you know, the Kansas City Chiefs won the Super Bowl earlier this week. And like every year, they have a victory parade. And we see this for pretty much all professional sports. You know, once they win the big championship, they have a victory parade back in their home cities. And thousands, tens of thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands of people, like we saw in Kansas City, show up to celebrate the winning team. Well, Kansas City Chiefs are wrapping up their parade, and right as the team is exiting the stage, gunfire erupts. And one person died, 22 others were hit by gunfire, including 8 children. The youngest victim is a 6-year-old, and there are about a dozen adults who have life-threatening injuries, so the death toll could go up. The question I have really doesn't have to do with gun control, because my God, we hear enough about gun control. Who's at fault, the gun or the person, right? I mean, we keep hearing split decisions on this and outrage from politicians and all that. So you could form an opinion on it. That's perfectly fine. My question really has to do with these types of events and how do you handle them going forward? Can you handle them going forward? Are there alternatives to it? And if you want to go to one of these events, how should you handle yourselves? So we've got Gary McNamara here. He's one of our law enforcement experts on the show. He's the former chief of police in Fairfield, right now handling security and government affairs over at Sacred Heart University. And I can't wait to dive into this conversation with him. Gary, hey, how are you?
Melissa, I am well. Hey, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. So I know for both of us, we certainly will not be going to any NFL victory parades anytime
That's
soon.
Right.
You're a Jets fan. I'm a Dolphins fan. So that won't be happening in our near future. But, you know, with all jokes aside, this was a scary situation. I do know Connecticut doesn't have technically a professional team. However, we do have very successful college teams like UConn and Quinnipiac last year winning. And UConn had a victory parade of 50,000 people lining the streets of Hartford. We have potentially an MLS soccer team coming to Bridgeport in the next couple of years. And we've got the cup that's coming up after that. So we're going to see these victory parades even here in Connecticut, or we have Connecticut residents who want to attend their professional team's parades. So first and foremost, is it even plausible? Like, they had 800 cops handling yesterday's parade. Is it even plausible for police to handle these types of events, you know, in the way that we're seeing recent events going on where shootings are happening? It happened with Kansas City, happened with the Nuggets, happened with the Texas Rangers, all within the last year.
Well, I mean, is it, you know, look, I mean, you know, 800 police officers, you look at New York City when they have thousands of police officers for different events. They put plans in place and they take action to make it as safe as possible. But obviously, you can't prevent all violence from occurring unless you take steps which are really not practical when it comes to a parade route where you're lining the street with people. So it's hard to establish a perimeter and only let certain people into that type of an event. You mentioned the indoor events and celebrations. That can be a little bit more controlled. But these outdoor events that are large and you can just kind of wander up and form a line, it's very difficult if someone has a weapon on them to prevent them from bringing it into the area. So it's hard to do. Now, should we just remove that? You know, we're really talking about large gatherings. I mean, so we don't have parades. Then what's next? Fireworks. And so you can see on and on down the line how difficult it is to either we say we don't allow any large gatherings or we take steps to make sure that it's as safe as possible, understanding that, these type of acts can happen. And obviously yesterday it did.
Right. Because, again, it goes back to the idea of living in fear, which we don't want to live in fear because you make a great point. So we're talking about victory parades. But what about 4th of July parades? Right. I mean, it could be anything where you've got crowds of people.
Correct.
And so what would you say, Gary, are some, you know, safety measures that we should be thinking about then, for example, because as we just said, 800 cops were there, and not to mention that they were willing to commission another 800 if need be, if Taylor Swift was going to show up yesterday, which she did not, thank God. But I don't say that in a mean way. I'm saying because it the crowds would have been much bigger, I would imagine, and the threats are a lot bigger. But what can be done then to better manage these types of situations?
Well, there's seen and unseen steps that law enforcement takes. And if you look at some of the videos, you'll see that after the shooting, there was video of a police sniper on top of a building. Now, that didn't just happen overnight. That means that they were already deployed ahead of time. So mm-hmm. they take steps that you can see, and there's also steps you take that they can't see, that you can't see. But obviously, you have to go there with a frame of mind that, you know, you're in a large crowd, and, you know, while you're celebrating, there are other people celebrating. We talked about it a little earlier. Criminals, those that carry guns and don't care about doing violence, are fans of sports teams as well. So they want to be there to celebrate or just to be there for whatever reason. So, you know, you have to always remember that around you may be people that aren't necessarily thinking that you're there just for the parade. And that's something of an awareness level. And then you really have to, you know, plan your route. We talk about this for everything. It's all safety awareness. But I think the key component when you're in a large crowd is a disruption or a disruptive event. Anything that occurs that shouldn't, that you don't think should really be part of the event, is a cue that you should move. So, you know, pushing and shoving or two people getting into a little bit of an argument, that's your cue to get out of there or move to a different area. Because these events traditionally or normally, especially this type of event, we'll learn more about it, whether or not it was a street argument, whether or not it was some gang activity or what, we'll learn more about it, or a fight started. It doesn't happen just, it starts to bubble up. So, or traditionally it could bubble up. So if you see an argument occurring or you see shoving, it's time to move your family to another location. I mean, that's really what you have to be aware of when you're in these large crowds.
We have Gary McNamara here, who is the former chief of police in Fairfield and currently does security and government affairs over at Sacred Heart University. And we're talking about the parade in Kansas City after the Chiefs were having their victory parade after the Super Bowl, and a shooting happened. One person died, 22 were hurt, and it included 8 children as young as 6 years old. So many people, even here in Connecticut, are very concerned about this, alarmed by this, and so we're just kind of, I want to say, going down the rabbit hole of how do we handle this going forward. Let me start with the scenario I was starting to talk about before the commercial break, Gary. So I remember back a few months back, probably longer than that, in Hartford, they were trying to create, maybe you remember this story, they were trying to create like a law-abiding gun owner citizen group of people that could be like a neighborhood watch in Hartford because of the crime rate. Do you remember that story?
I vaguely remember it, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
We don't need to remember all the details of it, but sure. What I was getting at is when we have these massive events, and you've commissioned all your cops out, okay? We're paying top dollar to have our cops out and make sure they're handling it, okay? To your point, which was, you know, you could have so much security, everything you want, but at the same time, you've got people who are licensed to carry, and they're going to carry, especially in today's world. People are fearful. They want to have it with them. Okay.
Sure.
Do police departments or does the state incentivize law-abiding citizens to be sort of like a backup system? And what I mean by that is, okay, if something happens, you know, as a gun owner, it is like your responsibility to get involved. I don't know. Like to get involved.
Yeah,
does that kind of go down a slippery slope of, well, I was just doing my job to try and be a backup system? I don't know. I'm just thinking outside.
Well, what it really does then is it devalues the training and the experience that police officers have in a way. And I'm not saying you're saying that, but that's really what it would do. Because, you know, protecting an event requires coordination, communication, an understanding of what the threats are. And while we know that there will be legal, law-abiding citizens carrying firearms, the minute we begin to recruit them to assist, then we worry about friendly fire, whether or not someone's empowered then. You know, if you legally can carry a gun, that's one thing. But to legally carry a gun and then believe that you're empowered by law enforcement to take action,
that's super dangerous. Yeah,
it is. It just starts to worry about it. Now, you know, law-abiding citizens, if they have a firearm, should understand when they can and when they can't use force. Mm-hmm. So that's the important thing that they have to understand. If you carry a firearm, you better know when you can and what circumstances you are allowed to use force under the state statute. And generally, protect yourself. I mean, the best thing you could do is be a good witness and get away.
Right.
To start having residents going out there and starting, you know, hunting down what they believe to be a crime. And you know, we saw that a little bit. But to have firearms and incentivize people to take action would be, I think, a dangerous thing.
Yeah. Okay. No, I think that makes a lot of sense, Gary. I was looking at the footage from...
No, it's a discussion.
Well, because I'm looking at the footage from the Kansas City, you know, what happened. And what's interesting is, I believe it was two out of the three suspects were taken down by citizens.
Sure.
So I'm just thinking to myself, and of course they were, again, like you said, they were doing the right thing. You know, these are people who are doing the right thing. They know their responsibility. They themselves, you know, so I get that, but I was just thinking to myself, I'm like, all right, well, how do you almost form more of a, because the other thing I was thinking too, Gary, is I've talked about this before, like with churches, you know, with church shootings and synagogues and things like that. I know in our church, and I'm not going to, you know, reveal what they do, but I do know that as part of the security, because I believe it's one of the reasons my father stopped being an usher, because he is not a gun owner. We have people, I can't say who they are, but we have people who are in the sanctuary who are packing. And the reason being is because that's a security measure so that we you know, we have a shot at you know, no pun intended. We have a shot at surviving, you know, having as many survivors possible. So that's why I was thinking to myself, do you plant people, you know, in the, you know, in and amongst these crowds? But you're right. It kind of goes down a slippery slope then at that point.
It does. And I was actually part of the conversations way back when in where you're talking about and part of that dialogue going back and forth, which, you know, of specifically your church and what you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but that's different because it's a private entity for the most part. You know,
it's
we're taking steps to protect ourselves and more. But when you put the power of the law behind you and law enforcement, there's a whole lot of other things that come with that. Then you start to have people walk around saying, hey, get back. You know, you become a quasi police officer because, you know, some people will take that and say that now I have power.
Right.
And now I can direct things and stand back. I'm going to help do other things. And so I think it, you know, these citizens took independent action.
Right.
And, you know, based upon what they knew at the time and what they saw, they took action to take down an individual. Now, it appears that they took down the right individuals, but you can see what would happen if we empower people to act and they act and they do something and hurt somebody that's not involved, that they just perceive to have a weapon or something. It just goes down a bad slope.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And again, it's one of the reasons I love to have conversations with Gary McNamara here on the show, because you can really sift through some of these major stories. And certainly it can impact us here in Connecticut. Again, whether we have these big events happen, you know, just a 4th of July parade, a Memorial Day parade, that, you know, it's maybe not a sports parade, but we do have them here. We have big events that happen here. And we also have Connecticut residents who go to these kinds of events where you're celebrating these sports figures and things like that. So it's an important conversation. The big takeaway here, though, Gary, it seems like, is being aware of your surroundings. Don't ever kind of, you know, put your guard down, essentially. You don't want to, you know, be thinking about it. It shouldn't be, you know, something that is distracting you from why you're going to celebrate, but it should be kind of top of mind, just being aware of your surroundings. And if you see something that seems off, getting away, reporting it, acting appropriately, it seems like is really the takeaway here.
Yeah, it is. But there's one more takeaway that we need to do. The police need help. And what I mean by that is, let's follow this event through. Let's just everybody watch this event unfold and learn who the people are that committed the act. And I'm not saying this is going to be the case or not, but if we find out that these individuals have been arrested and were not held accountable or something, the police need help. The point is that if we hear these stories all the time, somebody was released, what happened? Well, they had been arrested before, and we, you know, they repeat offenders. The point of keeping our community safe involves law enforcement, citizen engagement, but it also requires courts and laws and people that violate the laws to take them away and put them somewhere to protect the community for a period of time so that we can rehabilitate them. That's the key with this.
Mm-hmm.
And if we police can do all they can, but if we still have individuals that get a hold of guns and are not afraid to use it because they're not fearful of any consequences and they have anger against each other, we have to continue to look at that and not to get political, because it's not political. It's just at the end of the day, when the Jets win the Super Bowl and I go to that parade, I want to make sure that everybody's safe when they're there. Now, that won't happen, but if it did, I want to make sure of that. And that's the thing we have to talk about.
Right.
Safety requires all of us to look at events that happen, debrief them and say, could this happen here? And if it could, this specific incident, could it happen here? If it could, how did it happen? And what steps can we take to avoid this? The global conversations on gun control and violence do not work. What happens is we say, these individuals, if this is the case, shouldn't have been here because they should have been in jail for prior events or whatever, what have you, then we've got to start looking at that.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, this is very early on in the investigation, as Gary mentioned. So we need to still see it through. No, I agree with you that that's part of this conversation, too, which is that we don't even have a motive. We don't even know the connection or any of that.
You're right. And I'm way ahead of myself, but it's just frustrating that these events happen and people are.
The first thing they're going to do is talk about gun control. Absolutely. Yeah. I agree with you. We are missing so many facts in this case that it's so early for us to start talking about, like, you know, was it I don't even want to go down there. So you're right.
And kids, Melissa, kids go to this thing. I feel bad for the attendees. They all go to celebrate. And some people have witnessed things they should never witness. But
agreed.
I always appreciate the conversation. I know.
I do, too. I really appreciate you hopping on with this one, Gary. And thank you, because I know it's not a fun one, but it's an important one and something that a lot of Connecticut residents are thinking about this morning. So thank you.
You got it. Be well, Melissa.
You too. And I know we'll talk again soon. Gary McNamara here on WICC. We know February recognizes a lot of important subjects like heart health and teen relationships. But we also want you to know that coming up in just a matter of days, we are recognizing battery safety. In fact, February 18th is National Battery Day, and one Connecticut company is sounding the alarm about safe storage and transportation of specifically lithium-ion batteries. Joining us back on the show is my friend Roger Mort, who is the Chief Operating Officer at Packaging and Crating Technologies in Watertown, Connecticut, also known as PACT. Good morning, Roger. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me. I'm doing great.
I'm glad to hear from you. First of all, a recap for folks, if they're not familiar, tell us about PACT.
PACT's a company that's been doing packaging and crating since 2005. We've recently moved into fireproof papers and papers that basically mitigate the lithium thermal runaway. And even now we're working on a fire extinguisher, getting it approved. That actually puts out lithium fires instantly.
So we know that certainly in the last few years, as especially electric vehicles have become more and more of a topic that people like to discuss and debate about, there's a lot of fears surrounding lithium ion battery fires. But, you know, we think always about the EVs, Roger. Tell people, though, lithium ion batteries are used in a lot of other things that maybe people don't realize, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when we were just out in Oregon, the fire chief was telling us that the last three fires that burned houses down out there were from kids' toys being charged.
From kids' toys being charged. Wow.
Yeah. They're in anything that you're plugging into the wall right now. If it's relatively new within the last 3 or 4 years, it's got a lithium battery in it.
So it's interesting that you say that, Roger. We just had a situation in our home a couple weeks back. We got a new pet vacuum. It's a handheld pet vacuum. And I had plugged it in, and I had said to my husband, because I go to bed so early, I said, make sure you unplug this before you go to bed. Okay, whatever. Doesn't think anything of it. And I had like a panic attack the next morning because I came out, and there it is still plugged into the wall, and I could smell that you could smell, you know, when a battery is sort of overheating, it has like a scent to it. I could smell that, and I immediately unplugged it, and that thing was so hot. It was crazy. And of course, if you look at the packaging, it says it's a lithium ion battery that is charging this. So you can imagine the lecture that my husband got the next morning, poor thing. But, you know, like you said, it's in so many things, and people don't even realize they're carrying it in their pockets a lot of the time, which is their cell phone, of course. So what I'm getting at is the work that PACT has been doing in the last few years is really extraordinary. And I think it's putting Connecticut on the map for solutions. I know firefighters are excited, as you mentioned, for your extinguisher, and people are excited for your products. Tell us about some recent developments that PACT has been undergoing and has been experiencing in recent months.
Well, the good stuff is people are actually noticing us and starting to do the testing themselves. So we have the military right now wrapping inside of every battery that goes in, say, inside of like a Humvee or a tank. There's 180 to 200 cells. Well, they're wrapping every cell with our paper, and we're taking it out to the ballistics range, and they're going to shoot it. And they're going to get the same result we did when we did our testing, where we shot nails through everything. It basically, everyone that gets hit burns for a few seconds and is out. The rest of the battery has no idea there was a fire, and it still has power.
Wow, that's amazing. That's a huge connection.
Yeah, we had just signed a contract 2 weeks ago with a company out of Korea who basically already has products being used by like Hyundai and Samsung, and they're presenting the paper to them this week so that they can start trying to use it in the cars and then all these devices that are coming out. So it's kind of exciting.
It's incredibly exciting. And again, we have Roger Mort here, who is the Chief Operating Officer at Packaging and Crating Technologies, also known as PACT. It's located right here in Watertown, Connecticut. And I keep waiting, Roger, for fire departments across the country to just want to keep signing contracts with you guys. I mean, I keep waiting for that update. Not that the international stuff isn't amazing. I mean, that's a huge deal. It's huge for your company. But I always think about the firefighters and the fact that they right now don't really have any solutions to handle, for example, an EV fire on the highway or like that bus fire we saw a couple years ago, the electric bus here in Connecticut fire, and they just let it burn out because there was no way to stop it. I keep waiting for that. Have you had any inklings from Connecticut firefighters or anything?
Oh, we've talked to firefighters all across the country. The New York City fire departments are really like, come on, let's go, let's go. We're in the midst of doing our final approvals, and we're looking for a couple of manufacturing companies to make the chemicals and to package up the fire extinguishers and everything for us, because we're not fire extinguisher builders. So we're going to find the people that know how to do it, and they can do it good and put it out there safely.
So, you know, it's interesting. We're talking to Roger Mort, who is the Chief Operating Officer at Packaging and Crating Technologies, located right here in Watertown, Connecticut. They're doing some amazing things when it comes to handling lithium-ion battery fires. But, you know, what's interesting, Roger, is you and I got connected well before we started talking about lithium-ion battery fires a couple years ago. And when people go to your website, PactWW.com, and you look at the About section, it's interesting because PACT really was like a manufacturer of packaging products, so like moving products, correct? How did you jump into the lithium ion battery safety sector of things?
Well, I got a call about 5 years ago from a gentleman named Guy, and he wanted to buy two of these corrugated crates that we sell. They're stronger than wood. And my sales lady was like, okay, give me the size, I'll give you a price. And he's like, I don't care about the size, I just want to spray paint them and light them on fire. So she was like, okay, I'm going to have Roger call you. Because she called me and she goes, I think the guy's nuts. And I'm like, let me call him. So I called him, and he had invented this paint for the Saudi Arabian government that they paint like the King's Limo and all these armored vehicles with. And if you shoot it with a flamethrower at 1,800 degrees, for up to 24 hours, it pushes 60 degrees into the car.
Oh, my gosh.
So we painted a couple crates. He fire tested them. They passed. And it was a choice of, we can make a crate every 35 to 45 seconds, but it takes 12 minutes and 37 seconds to paint one. I'm like, Guy, I'm not slowing my plants down to that speed. Never. It's just not worth it for us, you know, to do that kind of stuff. And we started talking, and we made it into an ink. And the reason for the ink is every place that sells me paper or corrugated can print. So if my guys get the paper and the corrugated already printed, they can still make everything in 35 to 45 seconds. You know, and then we can put out a lot of crates and save a lot of people. So when we changed the chemistry to get it thinner, it not only sent to 60 degrees away from the heat, but it also sent 60 degrees towards it and moisture towards the heat, which for the lithium batteries is key, because as they're heating up, like you said, you were smelling that burning battery.
Mm-hmm.
Once that thing gets past 350C, it's going to blow off a bunch of gas into the air, collect oxygen. The fire's already started in the lithium. And when it sucks back in that oxygen, that's when it explodes and puts holes through people, through houses, and lights the whole place on fire.
So we want to avoid that, of course. Of course, that's the whole goal of this conversation, is to avoid that happening, because unfortunately it has. I mean, you look at some of these stories, Roger, it's so heartbreaking. I know you've heard of them too. But for example, the lithium ion batteries used in electric scooters. And you hear about those apartment fires in New York, a year ago, where two kids, you know, one is 19, another one was a preteen, died in that apartment fire because the scooter was charging. And exactly, the battery ended up exploding and the whole place went up in flames. It was horrible, awful story, awful, awful. But you hear about, you know, even phones that are up in the air and they overheat and while they're on the airplanes. And so let's talk about safety, right? I mean, let's talk about, we understand that pretty much every single person listening right now probably has something with a lithium ion battery in it, their toothbrush, their cell phone, whatever. So what would you suggest? What are some safety tips you would suggest to our listeners who have lithium ion battery, you know, in some of their products?
I would never charge anything in my bedroom. It would always be on a countertop with nothing above it out in the kitchen. If you're charging these scooters, you've got to do it outside or in an area where there's nothing. Because what's going to happen is when one of these scooter batteries goes off, there's usually 78 to 88 batteries in there. One's going to blow up, and it's going to send others up into the air, and then they're going to shoot in every direction. It's absolute insanity. But then what people don't realize is they run towards this because they think they can grab it and throw it outside. The gases that are already coming out of these batteries, one breath and you're dead. So a lot of these fires that happen in these apartments and all, it's the people are already dead from breathing in the gases before they even know it, you know. And it's so sad, especially for, you know, kids are always trying to charge stuff. I just did a speaking engagement at a school over in near Middletown, New York, and the kids were all just sitting there. I'm like, who charges your laptop in bed? And a bunch of people just looked at me like, huh? I'm like, well, on your laptop, your cooling system is underneath of it. So if you lay that on a blanket, you're literally heating it up all night. And if that lithium battery gets a chance, it's going to go off. And that bed fire, you won't even be able to move. It's too late.
Oh, it's so scary. I mean, some really great tips. And again, we have Roger Mort here, who is the Chief Operating Officer at Packaging and Creating Technologies right here in Watertown, Connecticut. It's also known as PACT. And they've really been recognized, not just here in the nation, but even across the globe, internationally, even our own military wanting to use their products. Now, what about little old me, Roger? What about little old whoever is listening right now? And we just want to have some of these products. For example, when I get on a plane, I would love nothing more than to keep my cell phone safe and to not be one of the causes of a fire because my battery overheats, for example. Or maybe I am worried about if I'm charging something overnight because I need it to charge. For example, I am one of those people who charges a phone overnight because I use it throughout the day and then I charge it while I'm sleeping and I wake up at 2 a.m. and I take it off the charger. What are some things, are there ways that we can order your products to have just in our own homes?
Yeah, very soon we have a envelope that's called a green security package, and that'll be coming out within the next 2 months. We have a manufacturer all set up who's already done trial runs and all. This envelope, basically, if you know you see your phone starting to heat up, you just unplug it, slide it into the envelope, peel the tab, and close it. And if you get the envelope and set it outside somewhere, if the phone does go off or the tablet or whatever, you'll see the envelope puff up. The envelope's going to keep the phone cooler. It won't let it get past like 580C. So those harmful gases that really become explosive don't form. So you'll see in the envelope, two corners, a little gray smoke coming out. Well, that's basically CO2 just being pushed out through the ends.
And that's
Yeah. And the fire, you know, the puff will last probably 3 to 5 minutes, and then it'll start going down, and the phone will be completely burned to nothing, or the device, but nothing else will be harmed. There will be no shooting of flames anywhere, no projectiles shooting across the room.
Well, I think that's amazing. And so, and you said that that's going to be available in the next 2 months?
Yes. We're actually putting together the first 10,000 order to run within the next 3 to 4 weeks.
Okay. Well, put my name on the list because I want to buy one.
All right.
I want to buy that.
Right.
Roger, I want to thank you so much for these really helpful tips. Again, if you want to learn more about PACT, what they're doing, you want to learn about their products or buy any, you can always go online to PACT. That's PACTWW.com. Again, PACTWW.com. And Roger Mort, again, always appreciate that we get to have you on the show as often as we do. Thank you so much. And we'll talk again soon, I'm sure.
Thank you very much.
All right. Again, Roger Mort, who is the Chief Operating Officer at Packaging and Crating Technologies right here in Watertown, Connecticut, here on WICC.
Let's get wild. It's the Zoo Minute with Greg Dancho from Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo on Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Oh, man, I don't know where to start, Greg Dancho. We have a lot of news headlines coming out of the Beardsley Zoo. Where do you want to start? We've got couples, we've got scams, we've got accreditation. We have a lot to cover.
Well, let's talk about the accreditation, which is interesting. This is the first time. This is the first time for Connecticut Beardsley Zoo. First time we've ever went out and achieved this accreditation for the zoo, and it may not be something that people thought about before. And but we thought it was very, very important for our facility, and so we're just happy to announce that we did get awarded accreditation from the ARB Net accreditation program that is part of the Morton Arboretum. So now we are a level one accredited arboretum also. So now we're the Connecticut Beardsley Zoo and arboretum.
What does that mean?
Some time before we put that.
What does that mean?
Well, what it means is that we show that we have a level of professionality that has trees. So that arboretums means that we have trees on property, and we've now identified over 61 documented tree species. We have more than that, but we've documented 61 tree species on grounds, and we're sitting on an Olmsted Park. So in Olmsted, Frederick Law Olmsted designed Beardsley Park, now also Seaside Park and also Central Park in New York. So just to show that he's a very famous landscape architect. And back then they planted a lot of trees around the area, and because parks should have trees. What Olmsted did was he really enjoyed having tenants of his parks were having wide open spaces and more areas that were more for solitude. So if you come into Beardsley Park, you kind of can see that. The upper level toward White Plains Road has more trees. Down by the water, less trees maybe in some areas with big open space for people to congregate. So some of those trees were, again, planted in on the zoo property, and now they are, getting to be over 100 years old. Some of them, are tremendously great trees, like are some of our oaks. We have red oaks on property. We have white oaks on property. We have some beautiful copper beeches, cedars and red pines. And these are all part of the zoo's commitment to preserve living things. So trees are living things. So what we're trying to do here is also show that we are taking care of our trees on grounds. We have a program of planting trees now, more trees every year around the grounds. We're losing trees, of course, due to storms and old age and some diseases. So we are now planting more trees on the ground. And as we do that, we start to grow our level of participation in this arboretum program. And we're looking to get to put the level two, which gives us 100 documented species of wooded plants on the grounds and with education programs designed around it. Right now, we do have education programs that are around it. We're going to have some programs where people can walk around. We'll have people doing tree walks in the near future. You can go right now on BeardsleyZoo.org and go under BeardsleyZoo.org/trees, and you can see the map and the collection data of what we put in, and so you can come onto the zoo grounds and find those trees. We're going to be putting out signs on the trees so people can identify the trees when they're here. And we're really excited about this because it is, again, you try to close the circle. And a lot of people think of the zoo as the animals and the endangered species we have here on grounds. But really, you know, the trees are just as important to us.
Yeah,
the plants
absolutely.
Are just important to us.
Well, and you know, I have to say, and, Greg, what was exciting as well about this, because I actually kind of knew about this announcement before you guys made it, because, you know, I get to hear about this stuff. But what's amazing is I feel like in the last few years, and maybe it's just because we get to check in every single week with you, but there's been such a focus, for example, on gardens and yep. helping the bee yep. populations, and how do you make your yep. yards more friendly for different species. I feel there's been there's always been a focus, but I think publicly the zoo has really made a focus on our trees and our plants and our gardens and that, not just the animals. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's been a real push to also bring yep. awareness in that regard.
And it's important because it's all part of living things that we just mentioned. And we have our horticulture manager is Jonathan Dancho, which may sound familiar. He's my son, who's done a tremendous job working on the grounds, working with our volunteers, because we do have a zoo volunteer gardener program. And so, again, not just in the greenhouse and with tropical plants, but even though those are important also, we're looking at just the grounds. And something I've thought of and pushed for years and years and years here is that I wanted the zoo grounds, you know, not to be a park-like setting, even though that may sound a little strange. But I really want it to be that it becomes a place where animals and plants and birds and butterflies and insects can also use it as a refuge. You know, that we're putting butterfly gardens in, we're doing our pollinator gardens, we're leaving the trees, we're leaving some areas where snags are on some of the trees away from the public areas that the woodpeckers can use. You know, so we see the affiliated woodpeckers coming in to the zoo from Remington Woods and using the grounds as a place they can get some food and maybe some refuge. So again, to me, this is very important for our facility that we are also looking at what we have on grounds that can help the nature that's around us, not necessarily the nature that we're bringing in from other places of the world.
So we've got Greg Dancho here of the Beardsley Zoo, a huge honor and a new accreditation for Connecticut's only zoo. And you're hearing the news here first on WICC. Let's also talk about, though, I know we've been talking a lot about the trees, the plants in the grounds, but let's also talk about the animals because we did just pass Valentine's Day. So love, we know, is in the air.
Yeah.
But what about the animals? Because we are getting closer to spring, and that's about the time that we start to see mating season, all that.
Well, it's interesting that Valentine's Day falls really smack dab into Connecticut's breeding season for a lot of animals. And some of the animals we have here on grounds right now, we're watching our red wolves, Taylor and Peanut. This is the time of year that they should be getting amorous, just like, you know, Valentine's Day yesterday, but not just Valentine's Day. But now this is the time for us to watch them to see if there's anything going on that we have to hit the stopwatch and start the countdown for any potential babies born a couple months from now. So we're watching that now. So February into March is really prime season for babies, we're breeding season. And squirrels right now, people may not realize, squirrels are looking for the dens now to have their babies. They can get, you know, they can get into a spot that's an inch and a half wide. People will think, well, I mean, if I see a hole in my house, you know, I'll patch that up. But an inch and a half wide, a squirrel can get into to get inside your house to make a nest to have their babies in. And that's what they're looking for right now. So people should be looking at their house a little bit stronger if they don't want squirrels inside their house. Coyotes are you can hear them in a lot of places right now doing a lot of howling and yapping because this is breeding season for coyotes. And they can get a little more aggressive this time of year because it is breeding season. So we really want to watch your pets outside and making sure that, you know, again, no feeding outside. Make sure your pets are protected outside because coyotes are now really on the prowl looking for mates. And so they may be a little more active than you'd be seeing before. You'll look up in the sky, you'll see bald eagles flying. Bald eagles will be flying by carrying sticks. If you see them carrying sticks and flying with sticks, that means they're building nests. And actually, you can go on to the website in Connecticut's Deep website, and they're looking for anybody that happens to see eagles flying with those sticks to build their nests because they want to make sure that there's more what they can indicate how much nest building is being happening this year. So, again, another thing that people can do as a citizen science. And really, last thing, which probably is the loves in the air, you're going to probably start smelling skunks pretty soon.
if you haven't started smelling before, because this is the prime time for skunk breeding season. Striped skunk is the only skunk that we have in Connecticut. And this right now, February to early March, is the best time for skunks out there. And, you know, skunks actually have their own signature odor, the males, that the females can find, and this way they can get together. So it's not just a scent that they put out for
protection.
Keep themselves protected.
Yeah.
Right. It's not just for protection. It's also for, you know, it's something they could, it's like Chanel number 5 for skunks.
That's really interesting, you know? Though, Greg, because I have noticed, I've talked to Storm and Norman and AJ, who I spend my mornings with here, some of my colleagues at Connoisseur Media.
I'm sorry about that.
I've noticed, not them, but I've noticed that we've had skunks in our parking lot a lot more in the last couple of weeks.
Yep.
And I've said to the guys, I'm like, are you guys noticing it? They're like, we're not seeing it, but we're smelling it. Like, the odor is very, very strong in our parking lot. But we have a lot of woods around us. And it's not any of us because we're showering. Like, it's our hygiene is good here at Connoisseur. We have, like, standards. But, no, it's definitely the skunks out in the parking lot for sure.
Sure. This is, again, it's breeding season. That there's some odor going out for the males, throwing the odor out to attract females so they know they're in the area. But sometimes the females don't want the males to be near them, so they will do the defensive spray. So you may get the larger odor from that. But that is happening as we speak. Foxes. And foxes also have a skunk smell.
They do.
So again, underneath your porch, you're starting to smell a skunky smell. It could be a fox, could be skunk. And again, you start looking for where you want to board things up or not. It's up to you. I mean, if you like animals, you know, near your house, again, don't feed them, don't get near them. These are wild animals. But again, this is the time. Love is in the air. Definitely February, March.
Yeah, and if it smells bad, stop blaming your spouse for it. Okay, it's just the wildlife doing their thing. Greg Danjo, thank you
so much.
Really appreciate it.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too. Greg Danjo of the Beardsley Zoo here on WACC. And the third headline that I did want to make sure that we touched on is the fact that the Beardsley Zoo right now has detected that there is a scam actually going on social media. These false advertisements that are saying that there are these crazy ticket deals, like you could get 4 tickets for $6.95, which is absolutely absurd. Please, if you do see those advertisements on social media, report them immediately. But make sure you're going to their website, beardsleyzoo.org, and buy your tickets online, or when you go to the Beardsley Zoo, buy them right there at the ticket office.